ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇಷು
ಅಭದ್ರೇಷು
ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತೀರುತ್ತಮ
ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ
ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತಿ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ದೇವಕೀ ನಂದನಾಯ ಚ ನಂದಗೋಪಕುಮಾರಾಯ ಗೋವಿಂದಾಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂದಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ ಪಂಚತತ್ವಾತ್ಮಕಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ಭಕ್ತರೂಪಸ್ವರೂಪಕಂ ಭಕ್ತಾವತಾರಂ ಭಕ್ತಾಖ್ಯಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಭಕ್ತಶಕ್ತಿಕಂ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧು ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗೀ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರೀ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿ ಪ್ರಿಯೇ ವಾಂಶಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪ್ರೇಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೇ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ನಿತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶತಾರಿಣೇ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಸದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ
Clip it. Okay. You can do it yourself. Hare Krishna. So first of all, I would like to thank each and every one of you for giving me this opportunity to be here. And just as some good satsanga, I'm here not as a speaker, but I'm here to learn. When I came here in 2007, this temple was still under construction. We had the foundation here, and I visited here with, of course, you might be knowing Govinda Prabhu and Gauranga Prabhu. I came with them, and this temple was still in its construction stage, and it's very amazing to look at what has happened. I'm grateful and humbled to be here. And it was wonderful taking darshan of Sri Sri Radha Neela Madhav, Gaur Nithai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman, and all their wonderful devotees. So thank you again for coming. So I was asked to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 31 to 40. So we'll just read the verses. And usually the way I like to do is have a dialogue, have a discussion. So you can actually put up your hands, ask questions, or if you want to give any comments, you can always feel free to do it. That way the discussion gets very lively, because there is participation. What is interesting is Krishna consciousness is always it's a process of reciprocation, right? So if you see the primary rasa in the Bhagavatam is the reciprocation that's happening between Shukadev Goswami and King Parikshit. So King Parikshit is actually engaging Shukadev Goswami in a dialogue, right? And his questions are very sharp. He also, at a certain point of time, asks questions in a way that is somewhat challenging. He's not just nodding his head all the time, looking at his watch and saying, okay, how much more time is left? Right? There is active participation. So, in hearing, there are two kinds of hearing we can do, right? There's active hearing and there is passive hearing. And in active hearing, there is active participation of the hearer in the exchange. And that makes the exchange, that helps the exchange actually go deeper. So, my humble request is, please, feel free to put up your hands, ask questions, give your valuable inputs, and that will make the discussion a lot more enlightening. So, we are on text 31, and I'll just read the translations, and then we can go into the discussion. So, this is text 31, starting. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. Thus seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Krishna desired. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gautami and bound him with ropes like an animal. After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. Lord Sri Krishna said, "O Arjuna, you should not show mercy by releasing this relative of a Brahmana, Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being. Otherwise, he will go down by his own actions. Furthermore, I have personally heard your promise. You have personally heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of the killer of her sons. This man is an assassin and murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately." Sutta Goswami said, "Although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him, although Ashwatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members." Very beautiful set of verses, actually. This is one of my favorite chapters in the Bhagavatam, because we like to look at life as black and white. And what is interesting is most things in life are gray. And what is interesting with the Mahabharata in general, and the Bhagavatam brings that out time and again. Is the whole dilemma in the Mahabharata is a dilemma of ethics. What is right? Right from the start, that is the problem. Right. That's why Krishna concludes the Mahabharata by saying, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mukshishami. Right. The reason why he concludes the Gita by saying, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to me, is because when we really think about situations in life, they are not black and white. Although we like to think about them as black and white, and we behave as though situations in life are black and white. And this is most evident when somebody is in leadership position. Because the way things are projected on the leader is black and white. Right, wrong. And what is interesting with the way the living entity likes to behave is the one thing that living entity cannot live with is uncertainty. So living in a grey area is the nature of the material world. Right. And the living entity hates it. Because living entity wants things in terms of black and white. I want things clear. Right. And what happens is, in order to make things black and white, the living entity also, as individuals, the way we interact with each other is we project. This is why this person did this. So because our vision is actually very skewed by our own understanding of the situation. And because, you know, we all wear our own lenses, right? We see the world through our own lenses. Yesterday, Sundaran Prabhu and I were discussing in the night, 9 lenses of seeing the world. And, you know, he was having a good time laughing at. So, when we see the world through our own lenses, because our lenses are not completely clean, we have a very interesting way of projecting. Right. And so this also happens in, how leadership and followership, it's a big problem. Where the follower wants a leader to behave perfectly, idealized. You know, there is this entire projection. This is how the leader should be. If the leader doesn't behave like this. But things in life are not so easy. Right. If you take, for example, even in a small family, there can be so many complications. Because what is interesting is people are not either black or white. People are grey. There are both elements that combine. And what also happens is situations are also grey. So it becomes very difficult to... So Mahabharata is full of stories of ethical dilemma right from the start. Right, till it comes to the point of the Gita, where Arjuna is experiencing an ethical dilemma. So the nature of despair, this is amazing. The nature of real despair, when we talk about despair, right? Do you know what the meaning of the word despair is? Anyone wants to share the meaning of the word despair? How many of you are in despair? Do you want to describe what despair feels like?
There is no certainty, there is no clarity, and there is no shelter.
Anyone else? What is the state of despair?
Helpless.
What's that? Helpless? Very good. Helpless.
Dilemma,
bewilderment. Okay.
Eagerness.
Eagerness. Can you elaborate? What's that?
No light at the end of the tunnel.
Right? Vataji, you said eagerness. Can you?
Impatience,
intolerance. Okay, yeah. That's a... Full of anxiety. Right? Full of anxiety. And I like to call despair as damned if you do, damned if you don't. This is classic despair. Right? And you don't know, there is no real solution. Because if you do something, you'll be blamed. If you don't do something, something will go wrong. Everyone's laughing. So, you see, and what is interesting, right at the onset of the Bhagavatam. So, the first 5 chapters of the Bhagavatam, or first 6 chapters of the Bhagavatam are more like a
introduction to what the Srimad Bhagavatam has to offer. And what is interesting is in the 7th chapter, there is a sudden turn in the situation. So till up until this point in time, it has been beautiful katha, and Vyasadeva is discussing Narad Muni, and you know, pure devotional service has been explained with a case study, Narad Muni's life. And suddenly there is a turn of events. And the turn of events is material world. and the beginning introduction of the material world is Arjuna's dire situation. This is the start of the Bhagavatam. Right. So, right at the onset of the Bhagavatam declares that the material world is not an easy place to live in. And the situations, and most of the situations in the material world we'll find are sticky situations, where it's not, it's complicated, right? And it's complicated because it has many elements, and we ourselves offer the biggest complexity to it. Because we like to classify our world as friends and enemies, right? Segregated, right? So that's how the Gita begins. Mamakaha Pandavas Chaiva Kema Kuruvata Sanjaya. So Dhritarashtra's way of seeing the world is mine and yours. So the three people in the Gita, right at the onset, who are facing despair. Right. And you'll see three different mechanisms of dealing with it. So Dhritarashtra is weak-hearted. Right. He desires to play the victim. So there is a situation of despair. And Dhritarashtra plays the victim. What could I do? Everyone else around me doesn't understand my situation. Right. So there are only two ways the ego likes to deal with the situation. The ego has to be a hero, no matter what. So either it's a winning hero or a tragic hero. Right. So there are only one or two ways of dealing with it. So either I win, or I say everyone else is responsible for my loss. Right. So Dhritarashtra is playing the victim. Okay. Duryodhan is playing the anti-hero, basically meaning he's saying, I'm going to win at the end. Although internally, it's still a crisis, right? He's afraid inside. But if you see the entire dialogue in the first chapter of the Gita, right? So he describes the army of the opponents, but he says, but our army commanded by Bhishma and Drona is far superior, right? So that's another way of falsely convincing yourself that I'm going to win. Right? There is no tiger in front of me. Right? And Arjuna's situation is classic dilemma, where reality of the situation is seen, but then the reaction to it is escape. So, too complex, I quit. Right. And then what is interesting with the whole situation of Arjuna is I can use my intelligence very effectively to rationalize the situation. So one thing Dhanurdhara Swami once gave me a definition was amazing. When I heard this definition, I was just shocked at how somebody could so eloquently put this. He said, rationalization is a service of the intelligence to the false ego. Rationalization is the service of the intelligence to the false ego. So we can rationalize every situation to perfection. But honesty is a very different thing. That's why when one comes to spiritual life, one is encouraged to be very honest. So honesty requires introspection. Right? Trasya shraddha dana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya. Bhagavatam saying. So shraddha, right? So there is one needs faith. And then there should also be, so there is faithfulness and thoughtfulness. And one without the other doesn't work. So thoughtfulness is a very important component because one has to look inside and see where all this is coming from. Right. So one, when one goes inside, when one becomes introspective, right, then there is a possibility of developing clarity. Otherwise, one can so easily rationalize one's situation and fool oneself. So Arjuna is rationalizing. And what is interesting with his arguments is the arguments are fantastic. For any person who reads Arjuna's arguments, like I teach the Gita in New York, And during our first session, you know, when we read about Arjuna's arguments, invariably, and these are people who are understanding the Gita, basic, you know, especially after 9/11, ethics and violence, there is a very big debate that's going on between what is, can we really encourage violence in the name of ethics, right? So, euthanasia, mercy killing, all those things are like very, you know, very debated in a very big way. So when people actually read the situation, all of them sympathize with Arjuna. Say, he's right. He's peace loving. Right, at the end of the day, this is what is necessary. So Arjuna's same rationalization is happening, and his reaction to the despair is escape. Right. So you see three different reactions. One is what? First one we discussed was victim. Number two was overconfidence. Number three was escape. Right. So, and all the three are facing despair. So this is the this is the field. Right now, this is the material world.
I just remembered another definition I heard of rationalize means rational lies.
Rational lies. Lies we tell ourselves. And the living entity has incredible capacity for self-illusion. We have incredible capacity to fool ourselves. Somehow internally we convince ourselves that I know the situation. But we have tons of, so, right, this is like this, right? There is a proportion that we know. There is another proportion that we know that we don't know. But a big chunk of the pie is we don't know that we don't know. So humility is a person who lives in that realm. It's like being aware of the fact that I don't know. So humility is not expressing, saying that, it's actually saying that I don't even know what I don't know. Right, that's how Sanatana Goswami approaches Lord Chaitanya in the CC. Right? All these people are telling me that I'm a great scholar. But my difficulty is, I'm a fool, but I'm actually believing their words. Right, so this is the bigger chunk of the pie. So one of the interesting aspects of self-awareness is really knowing deep inside. So we should increase the pie number two. When you increase the bracket of I know that I don't know, that means you are going in the right track. There is this other big blind spot. I don't know what I don't know. So if you are aware of this, every situation that we act, we'll really start considering the bigger picture. And we can also act from a place of true compassion. Right? So why this introduction was necessary is for us to understand Arjuna's situation. So what we see here is Ashwatthama has just killed the five sons of Draupadi. And just imagine the pain that Draupadi is going through. Right, losing all her five sons. And then Ashwatthama escapes, of course, and then Arjuna, who was behind him, tries to capture him. And in fear, so here you see somebody who is insecure. And in his state of insecurity, so what happens is insecurity brings out, you do things that without thinking. Because at this point, all that you do, you're working in a state of desperation. So I do what it takes to I don't care about who's damaged. I have to reign. I have to rule. Right. So Ashwatthama is a classic. They call sociopath. So if you heard the word sociopath means a person who is ready to destroy society. For sake of my own good. So, you know, the intelligence is completely gone. Right. So, Ashwatthama is in that situation right now. He's a real sociopath. And in his state of deep insecurity, he has actually released the Brahmastra without understanding what the consequence of the Brahmastra will be. Right. So of course, Arjuna rides behind him, and then of course, you know, there is this whole dialogue that happens between Krishna and Arjuna. And Arjuna releases his own Brahmastra, and when those two Brahmastras meet, then there is this big explosion that happens, and the entire world, when they see that what is happening, there is a sense that the world is going to end, right? And after that, of course, these are really quick verses that we can go through. Arjuna is really angry. Now, not just because his five sons have been killed, but just the sheer irresponsibility that Ashwatthama is demonstrating, right? So he captures the son of Gautami, right, and brings him. And then dilemma arises again. So, you know, in Hindi they say, right, "Mar diya jaye ya chhod diya jaye." Right. So how do you again understand the confusion, the state of again complicated. So in Mahabharata we see this is a repetition time and again, and Yudhishthira is the most misunderstood person in the entire Mahabharata. Right, really, my heart goes out to him. it's a very touchy situation, Yudhishthira's situation, because he's blamed on all sides. That's why he's a great soul. Right? Because the classic example for people who have read the Mahabharata is, why did Yudhishthira gamble in the first place? But if one really deeply studies the Mahabharata, they understand Yudhishthir, it was again an ethical dilemma. Right? What was his dilemma? That
Kshatriya can't refuse a challenge.
Right. A Kshatriya can refuse a challenge. By Dharma, he cannot. Number two, who was asked to invite him? Dhritarashtra through Vidura. So here, direct transgression of orders. As a leader, if I don't show people how to obey, right? How can I expect society to follow? Right. But at the same time, also knowing gambling is a wrong thing. And very interestingly, Yudhishthir also was completely aware that gambling was his biggest weakness. So Mahabharata actually speaks about how Yudhishthir was, he loved gambling, but he did not know how to gamble. Govind Prabhu will give more details on this when he comes. But I've had a long discussion with Govind Prabhu on this. So he was a person who loved, actually, that was his conditioning. But he didn't know how to do it. Right? So here, if you really understand Yudhishthira, isolate him and see what his situation was. Right? Somebody inviting him to fulfill his conditioning in a very complicated situation. This is how we fall into traps in the material world. A situation is there. I love the situation. This is presenting opportunity for me. But this stickiness of it is not easy. So we fall all kinds of confusion. Right? So then you see the consequence of what Yudhishthira has to go through is... he's insulted, right? And what is so amazing is his own family members. It's the most painful thing that happens to Yudhishthir. His own family members, and you know, Bhima is getting up in the middle of the game of dice. He's telling Duryodhan, "I'll kill all of you." He's taking all the vows, and he turns to Yudhishthir and he says, "I'm going to break your hands also." In that state. Right, Yudhishthir has to bear all the insults, and then after that has to face the insult of Draupadi, and that is a lifelong thing that he has to live with. And she calls him all kinds of words. She tells him, you know, "You're a Kshatriya only by name, and you have no strength." And can you imagine what that is for a man And for a Kshatriya to hear that from a woman, very painful. Extremely painful. That's why he's called a sadhu, Rajarishi. Because the way he bore all that. So, if a person has to live with integrity in the material world, integrity will bring with it complications. Many times I say, if people are not facing despair in the world, something is wrong. So, only two things. Either you have transcended, or you have compromised. There are only two options. Right? Either you have gone beyond all of it, or you have compromised where you shut down a certain part of your conscience and say, anything works. Right? But if a person is living in that, that's why the whole grey area, if a person is living in between, like I went to IIT, and before exams, two kinds of people are peaceful. One who has studied everything and the other doesn't care. And you'll see, previous day before the exam, you know, people were, I used to take notes very diligently in class. So, people used to be on my doorstep, previous 2 days before exam, they, you know, notes, they, you know, Xerox, you know, people are running around making copies. You know, tremendous anxiety. One exam, I had 27 people in my room. I was teaching them on the board, Structural Mechanics 3 paper. Because anxiety, okay, tomorrow. And there are other people who are totally, exam tomorrow, okay. Bindas. No tension. Yes, I'll eat. No problem. No tension, very peaceful, right?
That same happened with me, though. Acha. One of my colleagues, he, early morning when we were ready to go for to give the exam, he came into my class, into my hostel room, and he started dancing. So why are you dancing? Because I don't know anything.
I might as well dance. Right. So this is a real state of the world also. So if you have compromised, then we won't really feel the, so you'll see, some people are very, they can take very ruthless actions, and they don't think twice about it. And they can also justify it by saying, you know, I'm doing the right thing. But a person who is actually in the middle area, who experiences a certain sense of conscience, will face anxiety. Will face an ethical dilemma, right? And that is a sign that at least some part of me is still alive, right? There is pain, so that means there is, you're fighting to have certain integrity, right? So if there is no fight, that means I've compromised or I've transcended, right? And there is only, it's amazing, there are only two directions to go also when you face a despair. Either you go through it or you go backwards. Right? So the only way to go towards transcendence is by actually living in that state of despair and walking through the state of despair. There is no other option in the material world. Right? So this is Yudhishthir's example in the Mahabharata. That he shows by example how to walk that fine line, how to take all the. But what is interesting is, although all the Pandavas also get upset and angry at him, including Draupadi, right? You know, and he takes all of it. Still, what they understand, they know for a fact that this person is a saint. They know that because of the way he conducts himself. In that situation, he doesn't get angry at them. He doesn't chastise them. But so much tolerance, but he knows internal. That's why what happens is internal guide is so strong. He says, okay, I don't care if you reject me, this is right. And I will not deviate from what is right. That takes a lot of strength and courage. And he went through a lot of suffering. You see Bhishma, you'll see tons of examples in the Mahabharata. That's why the Mahabharata is a classic text on ethical dilemma. And that's why the Gita is the proper conclusion of the Mahabharata, because we have to understand what Krishna wants from us. Right? And that's why always searching out for the higher principle. right? How to act on the higher principle is because it's so difficult even to remember and recollect what the higher principle is in the situation. Because when you are in the situation of anxiety and insecurity, all our lower tendencies are directly exposed. It's just like, you know, you're just like totally exposed completely. And we tend to give into our insecurities immediately. And what takes, so when Krishna says, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukha dukkada agama apayino anityas. Yesterday, I was going home, we were reciting this verse, we were reciting different verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Tam titikshasva Bharata. Right? We have to tolerate. So the titikshava, the titiksha, the tolerance is tolerating our own urges and insecurities. Okay, I'm getting anxiety here, I'm getting anxiety. This person will take away my position. What is this person thinking about me? I know this person is thinking wrong about me. What will happen to me? But knowing, okay, I'm not going to act on it. Because the right way to act here is assertiveness, but at the same time coming from a place of deep integrity. Right? Silent strength. That takes deep level of maturity and deep grounding in our spiritual life. So it's not easy. So Yudhishthir's situation is that. So we'll see that trend continuing in the... So as soon as the Bhagavatam opens, that is a situation. Sticky situation. So what should I do? Kill Ashwatthama? Or not kill Ashwatthama? Not kill Ashwatthama. Because killing Ashwatthama means... I mean, of course, Arjuna was already angry, upset. And killing... You know, in that state of anger. And in one sense, killing was totally justified. Right? Because he had broken, and that's what Krishna says. Gives him the reasons. Come on. This person, no one is supposed to kill a person who is asleep, right? All the reasons that he gives. Right? Seven kinds of people cannot be killed. Right? So he gives that. So one who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot. Six. Right? Nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. So Ashwatthama has directly violated that. Right? Killed five innocent children in their sleep and then irresponsibly acted by releasing the Brahmastra. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, kill this person. Right? You also promised Draupadi that you'll get her head. Kill this person. Yes?
So if Krishna has directly given the order, yeah. Why does Arjuna have
to... So that's the stickiness of the situation.
Krishna also killed Putana.
You can rationalize it in many ways, right? Now, what is interesting is sometimes you are so tested. The tests are like severe. So when we read this, it's a very romantic notion. Oh, Arjuna acted with intelligence and and he took the right decision. So I will also do it. But when you're in the situation, is not easy. Because a lot of personal emotions are also involved. So, you know, here for us to really relate to Arjuna's situation is very important. Because personal things are involved, and now you're getting direct instruction. Somebody's telling you, go and do it. And this is Krishna himself. And just before the battle started, Krishna has given Arjuna full instruction on how he should act. Sarvadharman Parityajya. So Arjuna could also have told himself, okay, Krishna is telling, so I should act immediately. Right? But surrender is not an easy concept. Although we like to quote that verse very often. Surrender is not an easy concept. Because surrender, true surrender means it happens from the heart. And usually we act externally. Yes, Prabhu, I am very surrendered. My only desire is to serve my guru. That's all. Internally, I'm calculating. And that's why we have to be very honest. And if we are honest about where we are, then we'll be more aware of how our actions are. Right? And honesty is the first sign of spiritual progress. Internally, you have to be very clear about what is going on and don't justify it. Don't say 10 other people are doing the same thing because of which I'm doing. I am in this situation. In my heart. So that's why Dhruva Maharaj is such an example in the Bhagavatam of honesty. So when Narada Muni comes in front of him and tells him, hey, you know, go home, you're a kid. Right? Dhruva says, what your instructions that you're giving are instructions for a Brahman, when I'm a Kshatriya. Therefore tell me what is clear honesty. So many times what happens is in our attempt to actually really give a perception to someone whose validation we seek. So what happens is usually our position, and even in bhakti, we come to bhakti, you know, from the material world. We are tired of doing certain things in the material world. And many times we are tired of doing things in the material world because I am not the winning hero there. So I say material world is full of misery. So I come to spiritual life. But I have not let go of my tendencies. Right, I come with the same tendencies. I need validation, I need appreciation. Profit, adoration, distinction is there in the system. And I look for it even when I come to spiritual life. So either I look for it by controlling, or well, I look for it by being humble. Because by being humble also I can control. So understanding of true humility is something very different. So the humility starts with honesty. Admitting the fact, yes, I am conditioned. Admitting the fact that, yes, my service is not pure. That I have needs. That I have needs to be recognized. That I have needs to be seen in good light. Right, but by doing the service and by really making an attempt to actually move away from it time and again, I really want to purify myself. That is the mood of a sadhaka. So if you're not really honest about and actually cover it with the sense that okay, actually I'm pure, but other people are not letting me render pure devotional service. Then we're cheating ourselves. So we have to be honest. Say, yeah, this is there. This need is there. If you look inside, it's there in all of us. And that makes us human. That really makes us human. To acknowledge our own needs is a very human thing. Prabhu, this, yeah, I really want to, you know, I have a desire to actually really want to be close to my spiritual master by wanting his attention, wanting his recognition. But at the same time, I also want to work very hard to not really want it. Right? So I want to engage in this service in such a way that I want to, I truly want to move away from that, and also really being aware of the fact that these tendencies can come out at any time, wanting to prove myself. Right. So that's why even in service, even as direct as it may be, in this case, Krishna is telling Arjuna, yeah, kill. Even in those situations, we have to really understand where is it coming from, what place it is coming from, deep inside. Is it truly coming from a place of genuine surrender? Or is it coming from a place where, you know, this is totally playing into my conditioning and I can do it? And sometimes it may be true. An instruction may totally fall in line with, yesterday I read an amazing line. I like to read some Christian saints, the lives of Christian saints, because some of their realizations are very, very much in line with the tradition of bhakti. So I was reading from Thomas Merton, Thoughts in Solitude, a very beautiful book. And he was saying how many times we have a way of actually disguising our will as God's will. Right? But to truly say, okay, I'll do what you will, is a very different ballgame, because that will be tested when instructions contradict what you want to do. And you have to learn how to let go and say, okay, this is Krishna's will and I'll do it. I'll do what Krishna desires, what God desires. So this is the life of a saint. Right? So sometimes instructions may play directly into our conditioning. But that doesn't mean that I have... What is interesting is position in bhakti can never be equaled to genuine spiritual advancement. And usually we have a tendency to see it that way. Yes? Yeah, sure. So position in devotional service has nothing to do with our genuine spiritual advancement. So I may come with a certain skill, I may come with certain conditionings which enable me to do certain things in a certain way. But that has nothing to do with how much spiritual advancement I have actually made. Because those two things are completely different. Many times we equate those.
So on that point, we are given services according to our proclivities.
Right.
And then we excel at them.
That's right.
And therefore we come to...
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what happens. So our nature is in a certain way. And the spiritual master in third canto, Prabhupada writes, right? The primary duty of the spiritual master is to engage the disciple according to his or her propensity. Why? Because that's the only way the hook out of the material world is also our ego. And Krishna is such an expert. But that is what Krishna's mercy is. Right? And if you don't recognize that it is actually Krishna's mercy, that he is engaging my conditioning. So somehow we go into services with a sense of entitlement. Yeah, I deserve it. After all, you know. But the reason why I'm in the material world is because of that conditioning. And somehow Krishna is using that same conditioning to get me out of the material world. Right? The same thing, that is a conditioning. Krishna puts the hook, takes it out. So if we don't recognize this, and if you're not really fully aware of this, then the same thing has a tendency to make us proud. Right? And it will be challenged. That will also be challenged. So we might have to let go at a certain point in time. And situations, circumstances force us to let go. And then how we react, that will indicate whether we have truly made spiritual advancement or not. Right? So Arjuna, although he is getting this direct instruction from Krishna, he doesn't act on it immediately. Why? Because introspection. What is right? What is really right in this situation? Am I using what Krishna said to my advantage and actually executing my own? Or, you know, should I very clearly think about it? And what is necessary? In that sense, it's like you have to. That's why the end of it, real listening means being able to listen to the voice of the super soul. That's a very advanced position. Real listening is the ability to be able to listen to the voice of the super soul. And we have so many voices around us, including our own mind. But to be able to... So, the whole idea of discretion, right? How to act with intelligence, how to have proper discrimination. You have to have good discrimination to even discriminate between discrimination and false ego. So now we are entering the real grey area. So it's not easy. And that's why at every point, the mood of prayer is absolutely essential. Because if we are in the mood of prayer, we'll somehow get the guidance to act in a way. And that's why honesty, if we are really honest, then we will recognize this despair at every time. Yes, Prabhu.
Just reading third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I think exactly, you know, basically from when Brahma is born.
Despair.
First in despair. And he goes on his own attempt to go and find its root.
Yeah.
But then the Lord says, you tried on your own, but you couldn't.
Very good point.
But your tapasya, your...
Yeah.
Pleased me, then...
That's right. Then the intelligence comes. Right. Tapa, and then the aham eva asam eva gre. Right. The instruction of the Chatushloki then comes. Right? What is interesting, the trend you see in the Bhagavatam is that even Brahma forgets that Krishna is the ultimate controller. So then we have the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Right? So controllership in the in the material world is a natural given for the living entity. We all want to be Ishwaras, right? It's amazing. And somebody, actually, I was listening to a very nice class the other day. Dayamrit Swami, I think. I don't remember exactly. But he was looking, if you feel great about yourself, look into the mirror and you'll see a material body. I said.
So some people look in the mirror and they're feeling great.
Right. Yeah. So what happens is, see, our realm is, see, what is interesting, as soon as you realize I'm a prisoner, there is nothing, nothing to be proud of. So let's imagine, you know, a person in jail looking at his dress and saying, oh, great dress. That's our situation. If you're looking at our dress, which is actually the clothes in a prison house, saying, great person. So when we understand that aspect, and then we can always remain, we actually understand, my God, the situation in the material world is such a, and I'm also contributing to it. So that sense of honesty, when we act from that place of honesty, then we can take true shelter of service. Because we understand that the service is my hope of getting out. Right, and that's why it's important to do service in the right consciousness. Even though it is actually, according to our propensity and condition, it's important to do it in the right consciousness, because the right consciousness is what makes the service the hook out of the material world. Otherwise, the same service will condition us. It's a double-edged sword. Yeah.
Being honest, most of the time, it doesn't really tell you anything. Because you get into a lot of trouble. You wanted to become fearless, but again, you tend to fall into a lot of traps,
right?
Especially in the workplaces.
Right.
So how do you, in what consciousness, your heart is saying something and your false ego is saying something, but there is no clarity there. So how do you deal with all this?
Gray. Material world is a gray area. It is not easy. I cannot, again, it all depends on what the particular situation is and what the particular, that's why, as I said, we all look for we want black and white answers. Never get a black and white answer. You have to assess the situations from many different angles. Okay, what is my position in that situation? Who are the other people who will be affected? Do I have the capacity to see how they get affected. Like, for some example, sometimes the family members may be involved. And sometimes if we do a certain action, then it may hurt them. And in the end of the day, really asking myself, okay, if I take this action, can I take full responsibility for it and still move ahead? Do I have the internal strength to simply move ahead? So it's not very easy to answer those questions.
It's almost impossible.
That's why despair is a good sign in the material world, because if you recognize that, then you have understood the reality of the material world. And to honestly tell, the practical solution there is you have to seek guidance of people who can help you see the situation and act in the best possible way. I'm not saying it's, again, the perfect action. But given what your flashlight can show you, because our flashlight only shows us so far, right? So given what your flashlight can show you, you have to take steps. So what you say is, okay, this is how far I can see. So I will take two steps forward. And if I take two steps forward in the right direction, then my flashlight will show me more. So, really coming from that place, then, and that's not an easy way to. One second. Yes. No. This is exciting. This is good. This is a good one.
Are we saying that all these principles, honesty, and all this is just on paper, then? That we cannot really put it into practice?
No. Honesty is required. But most importantly, the biggest kind of honesty is personal self-honesty. you have to know for yourself very clearly where this particular decision is coming from inside. So when I mean you're taking a particular action, you should be able to say, I'm taking this action because I am personally feeling insecure, but I do not know of any other solution. Or if I don't act in this way, then somebody will crush me. But being able to admit that to yourself is the first step. Because if you don't admit that to yourself, you will rationalize it. But that necessarily doesn't mean you can openly say it in public. But you have to be aware of it. That's number one. Number two is being able to express it to someone who can understand you.
How the Chanakya politics say that straight trees cut always first.
What's that?
Straight trees get cut always first.
Sometimes.
Oh, straight trees always get first. Yeah, it's important to, in the material world, that also happens. So it's also important to protect yourself. See, sometimes you can tell yourself, okay, I'm going to be honest, I don't care about the consequences. But you have to ask yourself, do I have the capacity to? So it cannot be sentimental honesty. Blind honesty. It has to be practical honesty. Because practical honesty means you have assessed all situations and you understand reality very nicely. Right? So practical honesty entails that, and sometimes advanced souls can really be honest, like, and take the beating and still continue. Right? So we see Yudhishthira. Takes the beating. Okay, I keep going. But we are not there. Right. But you need one or two relationships in your life, and I'm making it a open thing, you need one or two relationships in your life where your life is completely transparent. See, I'll tell you, on a very practical level, our sense of security comes from having one or two relationships in our life where that other person knows everything that's happening to me. Technically, that is supposed to be the guru. But in one sense, the guru doesn't know most of it, given our situation. Because that's the place that most of us are trying to escape from. I only want to show the good side. But the guru needs to know, and the guru does. The guru is kind. Right? So, anyway, I'm just personally recollecting all the health incidences that I've gone through also with my spiritual master. The guru knows very openly. So,
No,
and the guru will also agree to you. Say, yeah, you're absolutely right. And you get the feeling, yeah, finally, you know, I've laid the picture. Too experienced and you know, have the capacity to penetrate through our ego in a very, very easy way. Yeah, so anyway, I'm just remembering a lot of instances right now where I was personally, like, you know, my spiritual master saw through my game. And at the end, you realize, okay, in front of this person, no game playing. Just be as you are. No pretension. So you need one or two people like that in your life. Because see, what happens is, we hide the darkest secrets within our heart. I can tell you that. I mean, there are some secrets that we ourselves don't know that we have hidden. We have locked it away inside in a, you know, comfortably, like, and those secrets are not even the closest person in life knows. But again, those secrets, those dark areas are areas where until we reveal it, we won't experience love. See, our fear, understand, our fear is because we are hiding those dark areas because we think that if somebody sees this, then I'll not be loved. So lifelong project is how to hide it. And because I have to live with it, I have to hide it from myself also, because otherwise I become upset. So shove it under the carpet in a way that even I can't see it. But the redemption for the soul is when it's, that's why Krishna says, Api cheta su duracharo bhajante mam ananya bhaksa sadhu revasa mantavya. Why is he saying that person is a sadhu, even if a person has committed the most abominable activities? If he is rightly situated in his determination, I consider that person to be a sadhu. Why does Krishna say that? Krishna says that because a sadhu is a person who is thoroughly honest. And that means he is able to accept the fact that I have done abominable activities and is ready to reveal it. Because he understands that by revealing it, and somebody like Krishna, and that's why Krishna is saying this, because he says that I accept the person as he is. Not for what the person has done, but what the person is trying to be. So when the living entity experiences love from Krishna at that point in time, gets the validation and the recognition for who the living entity is, that's when you go beyond your conditionings. Because now you understand, yeah, I have this person who knows and loves me as I am. I don't have to defend my ego. When you come to that point, when you experience your security from that relationship, then every other relationship you can be honest. But when we don't have that relationship, then what I'm trying to do is with every other relationship, I'm trying to get a little validation. And in our life, 85 to 90% of the validation comes from one or two people who know our lives completely. So when you get that sense of security from those one or two relationships in a deep way, then every other relationship will revolve around those one or two relationships. So that is the meaning of Sarvadharman Parityajya. That when you gain acceptance of Krishna,
how do we get the courage to take
it? It's very difficult. That's why vulnerability is interesting. I've been doing a lot of a lot of research work on this. And reading and just personally introspecting also. Vulnerability is the most difficult thing to achieve. So for vulnerability to take place, that's why Prabhupada wanted ISKCON to be a society of Madhyam Adhikaris. So if you read the CC, that's the beauty of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is, it's not that faults don't come out, but the way devotees deal with them comes from a very mature place. So Madhyam Adhikari is not a person who has no faults. Madhyam Adhikari is still conditioned. But it comes from a place of being able to deal with it in a very honest, open way. And a society of Madhyam Adhikaris means you will also create a space where you can help the other person deal with conditioning in an honest way. So I'm not looking at the person and saying, okay, this person conditioning, I'm going to spread this news to everyone. That's Kanishta Adhikari mentality. So what happens is, good leadership and good followership means, that you also give space for the leader to express his or her imperfections. Say, okay, he's a person. There will be conditioning. And I have to accept it. And from the point of view of the leader also says, yeah, this is conditioning. Okay, that's fine. I have to encourage, I have to help this person go beyond this conditioning. So that understanding is there. So when you create a space, that's why, the whole idea of counselor and all those things are there. Why? Because when you create that space where you can openly become vulnerable, when there is trust. So when relationships don't go on that level of trust, then all that we are doing is, it's Facebook friendship even when we are together. So our friendships have to go deeper than that. That means I am able to reveal my heart. And that's why courage comes from the fact that I can speak honestly and I test myself. Okay, can I really be honest and take the next step and say, Prabhu, this is really my conditioning. This is what I'm struggling with. This is specifically what I'm struggling with. And the other person is hearing, who is hearing this person out should say, Prabhu, I totally understand. Don't try to advise immediately. This is how you should do it. This is the reason why. Accept. Say, okay, this is your, I totally understand what you're going through. Just understanding, half the problem will be solved. Because the other person feels accepted. Right. So when that acceptance is felt, then there is strength in the heart to really work through that conditioning. Otherwise, what I'm doing is immediately the reaction is, oh God, you know, or if three other people come to know about it. And then the person, what strength does a person have to fight the conditioning? So, you know, when Rupa Goswami says, the rector of instruction, Guhyam Akhyati Pruchati. So that's a culture that we have to create, where we can really encourage vulnerability and honesty. Because by encouraging people to become vulnerable, we have the courage to enter into the deepest, darkest regions of our heart. Otherwise, those will never come out. So it's funny, actually. To be very honest, I can say that ISKCON is an organization. You know, we actually really talk about the highest goal of devotional service a lot, but we never really spend too much time discussing Anartha Nivritti. And what is essential for us at this time is we have to really work on, we have to really discuss a lot about the state of Anartha Nivritti.
So it is also said that Abhadrani comes out when we basically read Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is also stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, so the Bhagavatam is like a mirror. If you really read it with honesty, you will see the Bhagavatam reveal many things in you. I'll give you a personal example. When I was reading, once I was reading the Kaliya pastime. Kaliya pastime is my favorite pastime in the Krishna book. I was reading Sararta Darshini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. I was in Kansas. This was in 2007. I remember the time also very. I was reading the Kaliya pastime. And one of the beautiful aspects of the Kaliya pastime is Krishna is the absolute hero. If you look at Krishna's situation in the Kaliya pastime, right? He's performing. Right? Drums, music, lights, action. Right? All attention is on him. He has just won. Including the maidens, the gopis, all their eyes are on Krishna. And when I was reading that, it was amazing what I saw. Deep inside my heart, there was this piercing like pain. Why is this person in that situation? Like the whole idea is, I want to be there. This is exactly where I want to be. And when I saw that, I was aghast, actually. It was just like, oh my God. Very painful. And for me, it's like that glimpse, that window opened, and like I saw why I'm in the material world. Envy of Krishna. Right. This is the sorry state of affairs. So the Bhagavatam has the capacity to reveal it. But when we enter the Bhagavatam in that frame of mind, that I really want to see, I really want to know, Hridayantastro hi abhadrani vidu noti suhusatam. So the abhadras have to be first seen in order for you to remove them. Right. So that's the power of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't want to go over time, and so
it's good.
Please, so stop me.
In one way, whatever we are aspiring are material aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there anything wrong in aspiring material, whatever aspirations that we have? Because if you see, this aspiration is also not my quality. It is Krishna's one of the qualities, right?
See, the interesting thing is, all our qualities are ultimately coming from Krishna. But because we have false ego, these qualities become perverted. So they're not pure. And the false ego is purely my doing. Right. So the nature, the journey of the living entity is to undo the false ego. So none of the qualities are bad. That's why I'm saying, again, we are operating in a gray area. We have to really look deep to see where are these things coming from. And you see that they're coming from ultimately the pure soul. But they're covered by the false ego. Right. So we have to be able to recognize that, okay, this is what it is. The false ego is there. Right? And the entire process of self-realization is to remove the false ego. So how do I remove the false ego? By engaging it in seva. Right? Because by engaging it in service, somehow, this is mercy. that actually I can't render pure devotional service, but somehow Krishna is ready to accept what I have to give through my conditioned nature. And by accepting it, he's giving me, I'll tell you one example again. This was at my workplace, this was in 2002, where, you know, I was in a project and, you know, we were doing this project and the project manager was really, really happy with us and she rewarded us. It was very nice and we were all walking away. I was, this year is a good year for me. You know, this is going to be really nice. And then 2 years afterwards, after making a little more real, and then I looked back and what I did, and I realized, my God, I made so many mistakes. And she actually rewarded me. Right. And then it struck me, this is how Krishna works. Right. Because I would never be able to go back and see what I did if I was not given the chance to move forward. But that doesn't mean my chance to move forward has come because of my qualification. So this is the beauty of bhakti. So we truly understand what mercy is when we understand this is what it is. Then I am actually not qualified. But by Krishna's kindness, he engages my propensity. And then gradually that ego is actually starting to get removed. Right? So aspiring for material things is not good because it consolidates our stay in the material world. But at the same time, we cannot deny the fact that those are in there. So what we can do is we have to be honest and we have to engage. So now you see why Krishna consciousness is such a practical science. Because there is no other way for the living entity. Really no other way for the living entity. Other than being able to engage my propensity. But what is important is to keep that consciousness. Does that make sense? Any other questions or comments anyone has?
One comment.
Yes, really.
So this despair, whatever we're experiencing, that actually helps us to.
Yeah.
Seek shelter.
Absolutely. What is the name of the first chapter? Bhagavad Gita. It's called Arjuna Vishada Yoga, the Yoga of Arjuna's Distress. This is the first thing I have to explain. How can distress be yoga? Right. The yoga of Arjuna's distress. Arjuna Vishada Yoga. So our whole conception of yoga is yoga helps you to relieve stress. The idea is existential crisis is an opportunity for growth. Despair is an opportunity for growth. And this is where we are different from animals. So, dharmohi tesham adhiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubhi samana. What does it mean is, there is this capacity to inquire at the time of despair. The capacity to feel despair is the living entity's benediction. Because if you look at, not living entities, human beings, benediction. If you look at animals, they cannot feel despair the way we feel it. Because there is no sense of right and wrong. There is only a sense of I and mine. So there is no ethical sense. There is aesthetic sense, but there is no ethical sense. Right. Now human life is, we have come to the point of, that's why they say, if you're not ethical, you're not even a human being. Because you can only feel despair when you're on that level. So right now, that's why they say society is a society of animals, because we have no capacity to even feel guilt. That integrity is not there. Right? Because if you have to live with integrity, that means there will be despair.
Prabhupada says, even people don't even know that they are diseased.
Yeah. Jagannath Kirtan Prabhu.
Yeah, question. You were mentioning the need to listen to the Super Soul and take guidance. Arjuna is very fortunate. He's listening to the Super Soul. He's listening to Bhagavan Krishna, who's right in front of him. It's even higher. And yet he's still it seems to be interpreting his order or acting independent of that order. So what principle is being illustrated?
I think sincerity. At the core of it, that's the only wealth we have. We have to be sincere. It doesn't matter, and that's why if we really live on the boat of sincerity, we can also tolerate the fact that other people have misunderstood me. And not blame them. Because you know for a fact you have acted in the right way. Because it's coming from a place of sincerity. I can tell you, you'll not do damage. But it may not be the perfect decision that you may take. Because we are conditioned, we can't see things clearly. But if you're acting from a place of sincerity, you will not do damage. You, for all practical purposes, your actions will be right 80%. If you're acting from a place of sincerity. But if you live in a place of sincerity, then you'll see gradually guidance will also come. Because why? The intention will start getting recognized. And the window to real guidance come, because people, you know, a saint or a person who wants to really give you guidance will recognize that quality. Yeah, this person is sincere.
If I don't get it, I mean, Arjuna, he's kind of making a compromise. He can't come to the level of pure surrender, but he's still sincere. Is that what you're saying?
Well, sincerity means you first look inside and see, okay, this person, you know, Krishna is saying this. I mean, same situation happens in the later on in the Bhagavatam also, where, with Yudhishthir, right? Where Bhishma Dev is passing away, right? Krishna is trying to console Yudhishthir, where Yudhishthir doesn't get consoled. Then finally Prabhupada writes in the purport that Krishna standing outside was not, you know, Krishna standing outside was trying to convince Yudhishthir, but Krishna within inspired Yudhishthir not to be consoled. Because Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev. So how do you understand what Krishna's true plan is? So the channel of sincerity has to be open. This is the struggle for the living. This is where you hit a state of helplessness. Because our sincerity only runs so much. It's like you have to keep, you hit rock. And you have to Krishna, really, really, and when you really pray like that, you will feel your desperation. Your chanting really becomes a chanting of desperation. Krishna, I really, really want to do what you want. Really want to do what you want me to do. And then there is the cry of the child for the mother. But when we shut that side of us, we just act based on our conditionings, you cannot really cry. We have to face the burden of the false ego in order to be able to chant the holy names in a mood of a child. We have to feel the heaviness of it. Does that make sense? It's not easy. We didn't really know what we signed up for. Krishna is the transcendental cheat.
But how do we get out of that situation now?
Only one way, move forward. that's the only thing we have to do. We have to tell ourselves, okay, move forward. Move forward. Move forward. So in this Christian tradition, they call this the dark night of the soul. And the dark night of the soul is everything is dark. I don't know. And when we read the dark night of the soul, we actually think, my God, do I have to go through this? Right? When Jesus, before he was crucified, right, the night before he was crucified, he came to know that he was going to be crucified. Can you imagine the pain? By his own people. The very people that he's trying to... Rejection at its peak. Can you imagine that the very people that you have really given your life for are the very people who will actually reject you at that time? And for you to know that's what is going to happen. One is disgust. My God, what kind of people? I'm going to do anything for them. Secondly, also beginning to realize that the price you pay for it is with your life. Not an easy thing. So in that state of despair, at that time he actually says, right? Oh God, let your will manifest, not mine. And that prayer gives him the strength. So Jesus' struggle is a very real struggle. And that doesn't reduce him in any way or form. You know, struggle is important for us to know. Right? But the reaction, the acting of the struggle is the redemption of the living entity. So, dark night of the soul. Yes, Ruchi.
I have a question about Yudhishthira Maharaj. He is following Dharma, and he knows the Dhritarashtra following Dharma. So, why did he second time accept invitation for
playing? What is Dharma? Recently, a book came out. I don't know if you've read it. It's called The Conflict of Being Good. The Difficulty of Being Good. It's a very good book. If you try and read, it'll be it's not written by a devotee. It's written by Guru Charan Das. You know who Guru Charan Das is? Guru Charan Das is the former CEO of Procter & Gamble India. And he wrote this book on the Mahabharata called The Difficulty of Being Good. But he has analyzed the problem very nicely. Solutions are not, are not all that. He has analyzed the problem, right? The question is, what is good? What is dharma? That's why the Gita begins and ends with the word, same thing, dharma. What is the first verse of the Gita? Dharma kshetre. So dharma kshetre means material world is also dharma kshetra. But it is like Kurukshetra. It's not easy. Right. And what is Krishna's conclusion of the Gita? Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. So dharma in the material world is always complex. I usually give this example. Mother and wife. There itself there is a conflict. Which dharma should I follow? I have the duty of a son and I have a duty of a husband. Somebody told me, one person told me this really funny joke. He said, husband means hasna band. Give. So to answer your point, one second. To answer your question, dharma is answering the whole principle of dharma is not easy.
So this means, if you know that your elder is not right, you still can follow.
The way, that's why I asked this question to Radhanath Maharaj also once. It was a very private discussion. So he told me some stories from his life also. You have to really know what is right. You have to be completely respectful when you're acting in that position. Even if you're going against your superior, that's Prahlad Maharaj. He never violated the dharma of superior, meaning he was always respectful to his father. Always addressed him very respectfully, but at the same time knew what was right. So that's why he's called what? One of the 12 Mahajans. So Yudhishthir was also, he knew in that situation then which dharma to follow is a dilemma, it's a very big dilemma. So we only see it from one side. But if you see the whole picture, then things will become clear. So it's not easy. That's where you face the dilemma. That's why you have to really take, that's where you have to take shelter. Balram Leela Prabhu, and then I'll come to you. Balram Leela Prabhu had his hand.
That's where we want to be. Right now, I'm in a situation like that. A few years later, also, I could be in a particular situation. How do I know I made progress?
You'll be able to embrace the despair. That's a sign of progress. You'll be able to embrace the despair quickly. Let me qualify it. So you will see progress. Initially, it took you 1 year to actually accept, okay, situation is difficult and I have to surrender. Advancement means that will happen in 6 months next time.
On that note, I want to make a comment, Prabhu. My 7-year-old son said, "You speak in the class one way, but I see you acting differently."
Good, huh? See, innocent, right? It's like the Emperor's New Clothes, the story. The story of the Emperor's New Clothes, right? Fairy tale. Everyone was admiring the emperor who was wearing no clothes and saying, "Oh, beautiful clothes." But the small child said, "You know, oh, the emperor is not wearing clothes." You know, innocence. You know, there is certain innocence about it. Thank you. Thank you for honestly sharing it in the class. But what will happen is you'll see many ways. One is you'll be able to embrace the despair quickly. Second is you'll also not quit. It means there'll be strength to stay in it. Because you'll know what. In order for me to do the right thing, I have to stay. So you will stay in the fire. Without this is amazing, right? Without turning, and just by speaking this, I'm getting more strength. You'll learn how to stay in the fire without complaining. Okay, I have to stay here. This is a situation. I have to stay here. Stay here. Of course, many times we need to vent. That's why we need to have relationships that help us. But then you'll be able to embrace the fact that I have to stay in this situation. Number three, as you really start making advancement, then you will see Krishna's shelter starts to become your hope. That is a very, very powerful place. You will really be able to take shelter. Even when you are going through a lot of intensity, you will be able to, when you are sitting down to chant your japa, you are like, this is an advanced, this is a truly advanced soul. I mean, if you see great personalities, even in our movement, they're handling headaches like, you cannot imagine. You cannot imagine. Very complex. But when you see them chanting, God, I can tell you very honestly, when I'm chanting, when there is complexity around me, mind is all over the place. How do I figure this out? You know, I'm talking on the phone, I'm making schemes, I'm trying to see how to work my way out of the situation in a way that I still shine. And they surrender. So those 2 hours are like, okay, Krishna, please help me really act in a way that I truly act in a way that I can please you. So real advancement comes, you'll be able to take shelter even in a complex situation. I'm not telling you the problem will be solved, because that's the wrong solution. We cannot expect problems in the material world to be solved. Even in the most, you're spiritually, when you become spiritually advanced, when problem comes, you'll take shelter.
Actually, Anityanand Prabhu was here. He said that consciously, because you will be able to still focus on the spiritual activity,
yeah,
in a very prayerful mode,
yeah,
what will happen is that your consciousness of viewing that problem will become
okay. Exactly. And what will happen is
that problem may not go away, but because that becomes clear, now you can
Exactly.
act in the right way.
Exactly. The problem will become an impetus for your spiritual life. That's how you'll be able to embrace it.
Yeah, I read on this point, Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas explains the essence of Gita, how it starts and ends, and he gives a different comment. He says that technically Gita starts at 2:11, because that's when Arjuna actually surrenders his
mind. Yeah.
And then it ends with Sarvadhamam Parichaya.
Right.
And so it ends with, don't worry, Mashuchaha, and it begins with Nanusho Chanti Pandita, don't lament. And so he says the essence of Bhagavad Gita is stop worrying, I'm the boss.
I'm the boss. Very difficult to accept that, because I am trying to be the boss. Krishna, that is my biggest problem. Why are you the boss? But we try to communicate that to Krishna in a very nice way. That's all. Krishna, I am actually surrendered to you, but
I'm the boss.
I'm the boss. This is the game. Yes, Prabhu, I'll come back to you.
I don't know that.
No, first be aware of the fact that I don't know that I don't know. I don't know many things that I don't know. There are many things that I don't even know that I don't know. That's the idea. Right? So if you're aware of it, and then when somebody is telling you, Prabhu, you're behaving like this, no defense. Say, oh really? I didn't know it. By just having that awareness, you'll be able to see something new in yourself. Because other people are seeing it. And there might be some element of misunderstanding, but there is also a good amount of factual element. So you can always admit to that factual side and say, yeah, this is what it is. Okay, yeah, I should have acted this way. I accept. And as you move forward, then also being aware of the fact that you have the capacity to act that way. It's a good thing. It's amazing, right? Spiritual life means you can't be a hero. And this is a reality that we have to accept. when you come to that acceptance, I'm not a hero. Then you'll see your battles will decrease. Meaning the biggest battle is denial. No. They accept, okay. So, yes, Prabhuji.
Prabhu, despair is also one of the qualities, right, that we have and we face that. So this quality, is Krishna also having this quality, or did we see that, how did we handle despair in any of the Bhagavatam or anything?
You don't really see Krishna in a state of despair, or even if you see Krishna in a state of despair, it is Leela. It's not like the despair that we face. Right? So, like for example, there is a feeling of despair even in the spiritual world. Like there is anxiety. Right? There is always anxiety. Right from the time Krishna was born, Bhagavatam begins with anxiety. Right, Krishna book is what? Anxiety first. Devaki is in anxiety even before Krishna is born. And after Krishna is born, more anxiety. Because Kamsa becomes, as Gaurang Prabhu says, Kamsa changed from passive state to active state. So all the residents of Vrindavan were facing extreme, with Krishna's presence they were facing extreme heat. So the illusion that we are coming to spiritual life to dispel our anxiety is wrong. Because even, there is always, anxiety is there in the spiritual world also. But the reason why we face anxiety in the material world is very different from the reason why we face anxiety in the spiritual world. So, that difference has to be very clearly understood. Here the anxiety is because I am trying to serve myself and Krishna is coming in the way. The anxiety there is, there are five different ways of serving Krishna. Which one should I choose? It's a world of difference. Does it make sense? Sorry, okay, so I know all of you are in anxiety. So, thank you very much for this opportunity. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.
Unchakal patam bischur.